The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
I'm back, everyone. Thanks for allowing me to be away for a couple of weeks. It was really a busy time, a fun time, and thank to Doug Hughes for sitting in 2 weeks ago, and then the guys, Wayne, Ryan, and the clan, taking the helm last week. So I actually have not listened to those shows. I tend not to go back and rehash the past, nor do I ever listen to my own show. So that way, you don't have to be critical of yourself, although we're always the most, the biggest critics, right, of our own self, our voices, our reflection, how we said things, how we didn't say things. So I just don't listen. Just live in this world of blissfulness. But I'm happy to be back. Hope you had a great Memorial Day. It was a great weekend, wasn't it? We had a great time. I did get back from my Canada fishing trip with my dad, which is where we went with a couple buddies. Had nine of us together, a fly-in camp in northern Ontario. Caught hundreds and hundreds of fish, literally, but drove home. We flew up, drove home 14 hours from North Ontario, so we didn't get out of there until sometime around 10:30 or 11. And 14-hour drive home in a recreational vehicle, RV, and made it home. Got finally in the car, got home around 2 a.m., so Sunday was okay, but it was a little bit of a wreck for me, as it would be for most people traveling that far. And but then Monday was fantastic. We had a great Memorial Day, and we were on the lake for a while, and a lot of people having great time, great fun out there. It was great to see the beaches at Lake Lemon, is where we were, full of families and kids playing, and brought back lots and lots of memories growing up down at Fairfax Beach. As my mom used to take us down there when we were kids and frolic around, because it was free. If it did cost anything, it wasn't much, but most of the things we did growing up were free. But they were still fun, which is just completely fine. I tend to pay too much money for fun anymore. Do you ever find yourself in that position, paying too much money to have fun? Well, I think some of the things we do and where we have the most fun are just the free things in life. All right, I'm going to have no one on the show except for me today. I am going to next week start getting a hold of some of my buddies at the Ed Slot Group. That's my intent, to come on and be guests. I've got a lot of good people with great content. Looking forward to that. Going to put out a new podcast. I think it will be out next Monday. So we're going to like a bi-weekly type of rotation. That's our goal. Again, getting some guests on for the 2025 Final Drive. What You Need to Know to Win podcast that has become very popular, and I appreciate that. And I'm going to give you a little preview of that in the next segment. But before I do, let's talk a little bit about things and where we were last week in particular, and kind of where we stand on things today. So last week, from a market perspective, and I was not here, and I was actually off the grid for about 3 days, completely off the grid, but what I understand is the markets moved in sync last week with this perceived movement in the debt ceiling talks, right? We had weakening early in the week, and then a surge on news of progress. I actually spoke to Congresswoman Erin Houshin on the week before last, and I asked her how things were going, and she thought they were making progress. And then when I was going to be at an event, or at least meet with her on Tuesday, I think it was, or Wednesday, I can't remember, I got a call that she had been called to Washington for a vote, and I, at that point, they thought it was about a done deal. So just like I said on the show when I called him for Doug Hughes, the market has never priced in any kind of a crazy default, right? The media loves to talk about it, but when you, end of the day, you look at the markets, what are they saying? Well, the stock market's not saying it much. It moved a little bit with the debt ceiling talks last week, but what about the bond market? What really matters is if you default on your debt, or you were 5 days from defaulting on your debt, would you not think that your interest rates would be like 80%, 50% on debt that you think could be defaulting? The answer is yes, but the rates have stayed fairly steady. They've actually gone up a little bit, but fairly steady. So we had solid quarterly earnings reports, guidance from these big mega cap tech companies that helped with some enthusiasm. So overall, the markets were kind of mixed last week. Dow was actually down 1%. S&P was up just a tick. And the NASDAQ actually led the charge, as it has all year, up 2.5%. So the debt talks, they did dominate. Stocks were weighed down for much of the week by this stumbling debt ceiling negotiations. And boy, is that a good way to describe it. Which appeared to reach an impasse at one point. Tech stocks, which have led the market this year, were under pressure as traders began to anticipate the possibility of a rate hike in June and July. Sentiment did turn more optimistic after the release of an above-census earnings report and strong guidance from mega-cap chip giants. The momentum continued into Friday as stocks surged on this hope that the debt ceiling agreement would come together, and I think that's when I actually talked to her, possibly. It could have been Friday, I forget. But then we had this inflation read, and that it was really kind of higher than expected, I guess, so that might induce the Fed to raise rates even further. Speaking of that, the Fed, the minutes came out, and the May meeting reflected division amongst committee members over whether future rate increases were necessary, with more than half saying they're ready to pause, with those members supporting additional rate hikes, said inflation was moving too slowly toward the Fed's target of 2%. All right, and then we're going to come back to that in a minute. The minutes also reaffirmed the Fed's expectations of a recession beginning around the fourth quarter. And then in comments last Wednesday by one of the Fed governors, it just manifested this division by saying it was a toss-up as whether rates should be raised, suggesting he could support a rate hike in June or wait on voting for an increase in July. It's going to be a hard road to hoe to get this thing to 2%. I think we're going to get sticky around 3 or 4, but that's okay. I mean, that's okay. There's nothing magical about 2%. 3 is fine. You know, that's fine. We've had such low inflation for years. If we have to burn a little hot for a bit to kind of catch up on the average, that's fine. What we need is wage increases, which we've seen. But it'll kind of work itself out. I'm not that worried about it. As far as the recession goes, I don't see that happening in the fourth quarter. Now, it could happen. It could be a 94 type of recession where it happened, and by the time we knew about it, we were already out of it, which is just exactly what I think this could be like. Then the other question is, has the market, through the correction last year, whenever the Fed began raising rates so aggressively, was that the correction that would anticipate a recession? So that's the thing, guys. The market moves in expectations and adjusts on reality. So that could be the case. Now, Rod would argue, and I talked to him just a few minutes ago, that there's no reason that some of these indexes should be where they are fundamentally. But they are. And here's where we sit today. So it's going to be an interesting summer. Don't be surprised if you see some volatility. But I think by the time we get into the third and fourth quarter, even if economic conditions support some type of a recession, it could be cyclical as well. It could be it's receding in this particular area of the sector, this sector or that sector, while the other one, maybe the next sector, it's down. So it could be more of a cyclical recession, which is not that bad. I mean, if you think about it, I was down in Florida, and we were talking about, we went in the week before what they call peak season. Peak season starts around Memorial Day. And I was asking the person kind of running the place how bookings are going, because that's a real indication of what people are doing, and what people are doing really drives the market. Consumer spending, we did this a few weeks ago, drives the market. And they said they are freaked out because bookings are so down. They only have a few in June, and I'm like, wow, that's crazy. But they said last year they were booked almost completely solid. So that's telling me that people are saying, I may not want to spend $5,000 for this beachfront condo this year. I may do something off the beach, because I will say people were still there, but maybe just not as many people staying on the beach. And that's the way we operate, right? If this gets too expensive, we still want to do it, but instead of maybe staying at this hotel, we're going to go there. Or maybe instead of eating this, we eat that. That's just the way that people are. And that's the way that I think this particular, quote, recession could potentially happen. It might be in this sector first and then that sector. So my opinion. And you know how that is. Everybody has an opinion, and they all stink, including my own, is that, and most people are wrong, by the way, and you know I've always said, what's the difference between a genius and a quack when it comes to economic forecasting? It's about 30 years. And then you know if they were a quack or if they were a genius. Well, when it comes to this kind of stuff, you know, we're just really playing around with fuzzy math. But my guess would be that because the Fed knows and they've recognized this, they've said this, that it takes about 6 months for a rate increase to take effect, I think they're going to pause in June. And I think they're going to potentially raise it again in July. What they don't want to do is have done all of this work, created all of this pain in some areas, and not have gotten anywhere. Because we don't see massive layoffs. We have seen some announcements in different areas where people have been laid off, and typically it's an upper management. We've had that here with Cook announcing what happened in their world. You know, they were letting go no production workers, right? It was the middle kind of management folks. But that's happening all around the country. So until that kind of catches up with itself, and that takes some time, right? If I'm going to lose my job, I didn't lose it today, most cases. They say at the end of the year, we're going to let you go, or at the end of next month. And that's the way it goes. So we'll see how that all rolls through. But I hate to use the word predict, but I am believing that this is the way it's going to go. And then I don't think there's any rate cuts for a long time. If you just hold it high for a long time, it'll figure its way out and then maybe start reducing interest rates again, potentially in 2024, but I doubt it. Maybe a little bit towards the end of the year. That's a long way away for me to be forecasting. But then certainly by the time we get to 2025, I think you're just going to have to stimulate at that point. Now, let's go back to my earlier comment. I talked about this again about a month ago. It's very 90-ish to me because we had that little recession in 1994, which happened to be my first year in practice. And then we went on this massive terror for a long time. And what was that driven by? It was driven by the consumer spending. The baby boomers were raising families, buying first homes, second homes, all this kind of stuff. And that's expensive, and they spend a lot of money, and that drove economic activity. It actually exceeded 70% at some point through that decade. Then we went through the lull in spending, which started to crest over in the early 2000s, sort of getting to the bottom around 2007, I believe, before it slowly started to pick back up. Well, the millennials, which is a deeper or a much wider pool of people, are in their mid-30s. What are they doing? They're having families. They're doing houses. We always thought the millennials were different. They may be just a little later to the game. The average American in the baby boom generation had their first kid at 27, their second one at 29, and sometimes their third, and sometimes even their fourth. The millennials probably aren't having as many kids, but they are still having kids, but it's a little bit later. But here they are, 35-ish, 36, and that big wave behind them, that all is going to happen over the next decade. And that's what I sort of forecast. But guess what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to wait about 10 years to find out if I'm right, maybe even longer. Let's see. I'm 53, 63, 70. All right, let's do 20 years. I'll be 73. May or may not be sitting here at that moment. I have no idea. But if I am, rest assured, if I'm wrong, you'll never hear me mention anything about it. But if I'm right, I may actually say something about it. That's the way this world works. Let's take a quick break. Do you have an IRA? Did you just get a tax form in the mail from your custodian? What do you do with it, if anything? Why did it come in May? Well, it's called a Form 5498. I'll be right back to tell you all about it. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Man, I must have had some pent-up need to talk because that first segment went about 15 minutes long, and normally it's around 5 minutes long. But nonetheless, we have to do a shout-out to my friend Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Thank you for your continued support of the show. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance Like at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. Kenny Blaine Auctions, they are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. I saw Dirk in action on an estate recently, and it's pretty impressive. Visit them online because you can be the recipient of some of these really cool items at kennyblandauctions.com. And finally, Unrivaled Electric. They just did some electric work for us on a house down in Harrodsburg. So thank you, Tim, and your team. They are your full-service electrical contractor. They specialize in generators. I always say it, like mine. And thankfully, I hadn't had to use it this spring, I think, maybe once. Maybe we used it a couple times. Solar arrays as well. Beautiful days like we had over the weekend. Actually soak it up and create a good amount of energy. He's a veteran. And Unrivaled Electric wants to be your electrician. Give him a call, 812-361-3604. Okay, do you have an IRA? Yes. Did you get a tax form in the mail from your custodian just recently? Yeah, I did. What do you do with it, if anything? And why did it come in May? Well, it's called a Form 5498. So I actually pulled my 5498. I got it. I looked at it. I thought, wow, what good radio content is this? Well, what is a 5498? It is literally an informational return that is sent to the IRS from your custodian. When I say custodian, it's the Fidelities of the world, the American Funds of the world, all the different people that handle IRA accounts. They will send a form out in May, and I think they do that to, number one, they need year-end data, and it takes some time to get that. Two, I think they don't want to confuse it with your other tax forms. So it comes in May, but it confuses people because they're like, why did I get this in May? I don't really know for sure, but those are a couple of guesses. But it's an informational form that goes to the IRS, and it says it right on there. This was sent to the Internal Revenue Service right at the top to tell them how much you have in your retirement account. Now, I've been saying this for years. The IRS knows how much you have in your accounts. They know when you have to take it out, and they just changed the rules on us to when you have to take it out. So they tell you when to take it out. They tell you how much of it is theirs, and that is what the tax rates are at the time you take it out. And if that doesn't give you suspicion, then nothing will, that this is a big money grab. Your retirement accounts, trillions of dollars in tax-deferred retirement accounts, is the big money grab. I'm going to do a podcast and dig into this a little bit deeper. So you're going to have to listen to the 2025 Final Drive. What You Need to Know to Win podcast to get maybe a little more opinion. I think that's probably the case. On the podcast, a little more opinion, a little more, I'll have to put my little wires on my hat because maybe a little more conspiracy theorist. But I don't know. I'm just saying, listen, I may or may not be right about this, but when you look at the fact that the Congressional Budget Office over and over and over comes out and says, hey, taxes rates have to double, for simply to pay for the things we've already promised. This was the debates they've had in Washington, talking about discretionary spending, which is a very small amount of the overall budget. It's going to have to happen at some point. There's been a lot of people now finally talking about this. So I think the debt ceiling, although some people say we shouldn't even have it, I think it's great because it gives people a chance to really sit back and ponder where we are, what are we doing wrong, what else can we do right. But I can tell you, when you spend most of your money on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt, and the rest is discretionary spending, you don't have a lot of levers to pull. You either have to cut benefits, which no one has the appetite to do, or you have to raise taxes, raise revenue somehow. So those are the answers. Now, is it income taxes only? I've said this since the beginning of time when I wrote the book, and we've been talking about this since 2017, tax cuts happen. Or is it some other tax? You know, I was watching a commercial about DeSantis running for president, and he has proposed in the past, I guess, a national sales tax. Well, that goes all the way back to Governor Brown in California years and years ago, national sales tax. It's going to have to come from somewhere. That's my point. But for you to receive a Form 5498 in the mail, and you're like, what is this thing? It is to let the IRS know exactly how much you have. And I believe much of the change in the laws that happen currently and on you, when you have to take your money and when your beneficiaries have to take your money, lines up with the future likely tax policies to collect a bunch of revenue. So again, I haven't completed the podcast yet. I am going to try to get that done. Even maybe I have to have it done today, being Thursday, so which means I'm doing a double header here. But it's the only way to get it to producers and get it to editing and all that kind of stuff. So if I sound better on the podcast than I do on the radio show, it's because that actually gets edited. This does not get edited. What you hear is what you get. So I'm going to get into this in deep detail, I hope, but it's what is your three-year plan? We have 2023, 2024, 2025. Now in 2024, we may see potential change in the whatever in Washington, and tax policy could get extended or changed or whatever. But we're nearly halfway through 2023 already, and we know that we have 3 years to make this happen. So what is your three-year plan? That's really important to know. So lastly on this, the 5498 also lets them know if you did a rollover or not. You took money out and didn't roll it over, even if you said you did. They will send you a notice about 2 years from now saying, prove it to me that you rolled this money over. Because you can do it a couple ways. Trustee to trustee transfer, that one's super easy, super great. Or you can do an indirect rollover where you have 60 days. And you can do one every 365 days where I go to the bank, I have money in an IRA CD, I pull it out in cash, I have 60 days to put it back into another IRA. It can be anywhere. And that's considered a rollover and completely fine. But there's really no paper trail for that. So on your tax return, you simply say, I did it. Well, the 5498 will call you out on it if you didn't. So this is a really, really important form to understand what the purpose of it is. You don't have to do anything with it. In fact, I put mine in the shredder right before I came to the show. I didn't even want to look at it. And again, I have very little money in tax-deferred accounts. So people will say, David, how much do you have in IRAs? I said, traditional or Roth? They'll say, traditional. As little as I have to. Our simple plan that we had over at our office, there was not an option for a Roth until just recently. I think we'll be able to do that next year. But, and my our employer contributions that we put in for everyone, the 3%, that can now go into a Roth, but that's the only money that I have. So every couple of years, whatever accumulates in there, I roll it over to an IRA, and then you know what I do? I convert it to a Roth. Again, going back to the story of multi-generational wealth money. When I come back, I can't even begin to describe how important this is. But I'm going to talk about it when I come back because I'm running a little bit over. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You just have me today. Sorry about that. But after being out for 2 weeks, not being on the show, calling into Glass in the afternoon on Wednesday was a real pleasure. But I am fired up and ready to go. And looking forward to an outstanding summer. It'll be by before you know it. I'm actually fishing on Sunday. So many of you know that I'm very active with the youth community, right? So I've been coaching youth football forever, which I believe that's going to end soon, if not this year. Maybe even last year was my last year. I'm trying to steal some time back. But one of the things I did starting in 2020, when I had very little to do, I started being a boat captain for the high school fishing club. So I started fishing with one little guy, and here he is a senior now, and he's in the state finals this weekend. And I've not been able to fish with him this year because I've been too busy, but I was able to go. So we're going up to Warsaw and with the other members that qualified for the state tournament and fishing up there on Sunday, and then I'm doing our good old-fashioned Hayes Boy camp out at beautiful West Bog Park in Lagodi, Indiana, the week following. But I will be here in studio, I promise you, for the majority of the summer. Now, I know I mentioned this on a recent podcast, but I just can't reinforce this enough. Well, first of all, yeah, let me talk about this first. So I did a podcast on multi-generational wealth transfer using one single Roth conversion. Let's use me as an example. I'm 53. And let's say I decided, you know what, I'm going to convert $200,000 to Roth. Great. And let's say that cost me $70,000 in taxes. So I paid $70,000, remember that. But I tragically died at 63, 10 years later. But I grew that money from the 200, if it doubles every 10 years at 7.2%, then I would have $400,000. My wife, who's also 53, Misty, she now takes it as her own. And she lives to 93, which is highly possible knowing her grandmother lived until 98. And I have one son, Will, who will inherit this money at age 68. We had him at age 30. So let's walk through the math on this if I can get it right. I don't have it written down, so it's all in my noggin. So the $200,000 Roth I did, it doubled, I die, $400,000. My wife lives from to 93, so she lives 73, 83, 90, 30 more years, so three more triples. So 400, 800, 1.6, 3.2 million, right? Then she dies. My son gets it, and because it's a Roth, he has no obligation. He's 68, by the way, at this time, again. He has no obligation to take any money out for 10 more years. So now it goes to $6.4 million. My question to you is, was that worth it? Was it worth it for, and then let's say he died. Well, guess what? It's a Roth. It all goes tax-free to his family. Was it worth me paying $70,000, worst case scenario, on $200,000 for my family, for my wife, my family, to have over $6 million tax-free? I don't have to tell you that, right? The math is real. So the question is, and I've talked about this many times, are you too old to do a Roth conversion? I don't care if you're 53, 63, 73, or even 83 or older, you're never too old to consider a Roth conversion. Maybe mom's in a lower tax bracket. I'm in a high tax bracket. Mom should be converting at her low brackets to move money tax-free to her high-income earner kids. There's just a lot there. But if this kind of stuff doesn't motivate you, nothing will. In fact, just turn the radio off because it's not going to help you to sit here and listen to this anymore. It's like, you know, if you're not going to believe it or eat it up, just quit coming to church. I mean, this is the facts of my mission, my passion of trying to educate and communicate this message to as many people as possible. That's why when some people say, oh, tell me your opinion of this, I'm like, here's a podcast, listen to it, or listen to this radio show I did on this topic. Because my goal was, when I wrote the book on the tax code and the changes and the potential of what's going to happen, is for me to be able to tell the story a few times to thousands and thousands of people. I don't want to have to tell it a thousand and thousand times. Now, you may listen to this a lot, and you may say, well, you sound like you do say it a thousand times, but there's thousands of people listening. To the podcast, we have 1,000 people listening. Radio show, they tell me, but, you know, I don't know how many people listen, but they say a lot. So I'm reaching a lot of people, and that's the purpose of this program. All right, let me take a quick break. When I come back, I'm going to talk about maybe some tax maneuvers you should think about in the year you have lost a spouse. And that's not a fun topic to talk about, but you definitely don't want to leave some money on the table. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes on this beautiful Thursday. It's going to be a squelcher, I understand, this weekend, which does not bode well for fishing on the Lake Wawasee up in Warsaw on Sunday, but it may rain on Sunday. I have no idea. I hope it doesn't rain. Jeez, that'd be miserable. I've done that many times in the past, and it is no fun. To be a boat captain means you don't fish. You just basically drive the boat. The kid fishes. They run the trolling motor. They do everything. You can't even net the fish. So it is a long job. So bring your snacks, bring something cold to drink, sit back and try to give them a little, you can give them directions. You can say, hey, I might try this, I might try that. But I think at this point, this little guy, he's a better fisherman than me. He fishes every day. So, and I can't fish every day. Even if I did, it's like playing golf every day. Are you really going to get better, a lot better? There comes a point if you're playing golf every day and you're not getting better, you're probably not going to get any better unless you just have some epiphany that says, I don't know. I mean, but yeah, it ain't gonna happen. All right, so let me see. Did I miss anything in the last segment? I just want to make sure. I probably did, but don't worry about that. I'm going to run that through the gauntlet when I do the 2025 Final Drive podcast on the Forum 5498. I'm going to get into a lot of detail on this and really have some fun with it. So I mentioned tax maneuvers to think about in the year a spouse passes away. I've always said, at some point in your life, you will file as a single taxpayer, either through divorce or through death, and it's no fun. Because when a spouse passes away, and that's what I want to stick with, at least two things happen, and they're both bad. You lose at least one check, meaning at least one Social Security check goes away, or maybe more if you have a pension, and your taxes double. Everything you knew as married filing joint literally gets cut in half for the most part. So now I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I just lost some income. I'm going to need some more. And my taxes are double. So another reason to have money in a Roth. In fact, I'm going to sidestep that for just a second and say this. When's the best time to use a Roth? When you need it. I was actually encouraged because I had a person who needed to buy a house. And it was, they're going to pay cash. Well, they had built up a great Roth through the years of conversions, and that's what we used. We, like 80% of their Roth went to buy this house, because if they took out too much money from their other accounts, then Medicare premiums would have been higher, higher tax brackets, all this kind of other stuff that happens. But, you know, they used the Roth. So that's another reason to have a Roth, because when you need money after one spouse dies, we're better to get it than a tax-free account. So you lose at least one check, taxes double. Then you need more money, and your taxes are higher and all that kind of stuff. So the year your spouse passes away, this is your very last chance to do a married filing joint tax return. So whether they passed away in February, like my mother, or they pass away in December, it's your last chance to do a married filing joint tax return. Your last chance to take advantage of these extremely low tax rates at a MFJ tax return or tax rate, married filing joint. So it's also your last chance to do it, in my opinion, a massive Roth conversion as well. It's good for your future. It's great for your beneficiaries as well. Unless you had your spouse had tons of life insurance, then it might be a little bit different. Have you ever heard the saying, I'm worth more dead than alive? Yeah, there's a point in my life where that was true, where I had a lot more life insurance than what I was definitely worth. And then, you know, as time goes on, you hopefully need less and less and less of that. But this is your chance. So whether it's capital gains, whether it is a Roth conversion, whether it's a huge withdrawal, or just realize some income that maybe you didn't think about realizing, now to take advantage of that very last chance to do a married filing joint tax return. So with that said, I know a lot of people this past year have had folks pass away. I think it's really important for you to understand, you know, just take a step back, understand where I am, what should I do? People are always like, you shouldn't do anything, you know, a year or whatever after your spouse dies. Just don't do anything. Well, you should do some things. And some things, you know, you maybe haven't even thought about, right? And this probably is one of them. What should I do now that this is my last year of doing a married filing joint tax return? And the issue is, no one's going to talk to you about this because no one's going to reach out and say, hey, you should do some of these things. What they do is they'd file your tax return next March or whatever, and they say, oh, well, you know what? You probably should have done this. And then there you go, guys. Once again, getting should on, and that's what happens whenever a spouse passes away. A lot of shoulds, right? Shoulda, coulda, dudda, did this, did that, whatever. So I'm just trying to prevent you from being should on and say, listen, do something that you should do, which is make a tax move in the last year that you have a married filing joint tax return. All right, I'm going to come back and talk a little bit about the fixed income market and what it's telling us from an economic perspective, if I have time. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Don't be should on. I have to be real careful. I think I can say the other word. It's not one of the dirty dozens. Every year, by the way, when you're in public radio, they give you a document to sign. It says, these are words you cannot say, and you have to sign off on it. I promise not to say it. And when you read the list, it makes you literally laugh out loud. It's like, no, I really wanted to say that word next week. But anyway, I think that one you can say, but I'm going to not say it. How about that? All right, so let's talk bonds. You know, everyone talks about stock market, stock market, stock market. But you know what? In my nearly 30-year career, this is the best opportunity we've ever had in fixed income. When you're out there buying individual bonds, and you guys know I'm a big fan of individual bonds. I like to know what I own. I like to know what my interest rate is. I want to know what I paid for it. I want to know what I'm going to get back at maturity. I want to know these things rather than bond funds. Bond funds, you just kind of at the mercy of the manager and everyone else in the fund, because whenever they have a run on the bank with bond funds, guess what happens? They sell their crap, and that's what you're left with. They sell their best stuff. I'm sorry. They sell their best stuff, and you're left with the crap. So I'd rather, if I had the money, buy my own individual bonds. And there's a couple of ways to buy them. You can buy them institutionally, which is very difficult because you have to have a ton of money to buy institutionally. Or you can buy on the retail side, which isn't bad. It's just it has to go through about three hands before you get it into your account. But nonetheless, what is fixed income telling us? Well, what it's telling us right now is that if you are willing to buy something that matures in a year or two or 3 years, you're going to get paid a lot. And well, what does a lot mean? You're going to get paid probably close to 5%-ish. But then why would I go out 5 years or 10 years and only get 4 or 4.5? Well, because the market's telling us that interest rates are going to come down in the next couple of years. And then these 1 and 2s are going to mature, And you're going to wish you had that 4.5 at 10-year maturity, with now, by the way, only 8 years left. So that's why it makes sense to do it. So what's that telling us? It's telling us in the short run that it's pricing in a lot of risk in the market, it's the economy, it's inflation, all of that's priced in. When you look at bonds, it will tell you what the bond market expects growth to be in the future, which is also inflation. So if a 10-year bond, and mostly it's treasury, but let's say a 10-year bond's at 4%, saying, hey, over the next 10 years, we're expecting about, you know, a 4% growth rate in the economy. That's what bonds do. So right now, what it's telling us is that we have in the short run, all the stuff that we're feeling, but in the long run, and when I say the long run, really in the next couple of years, it should start to turn over, and that's what it's telling us. So bonds have always been, in my opinion, the best indicator of where we're headed, and especially with the Fed out of the buying market. See, they were the number one purchaser of all fixed income around, right? They were it. I think it's now a little more accurate. However, it's better but not great, because now they are not a net seller, but they're rolling things off. They're letting things mature, and they're not rebuying. And I've always, it's so confusing to people, because it's kind of like, how does the government buy government bonds, hold them, let them mature, and give them money, and then the money goes back to the government? I don't know. It's really difficult to understand all this. But anyway, it does give us some indication where we're headed. So that's why you would, in many cases, look out and say, well, I'll take that 4 or 4.5% for 7 or 8 years or 10 years, because you know what? In a couple of years, that's not going to be around anymore, and I'm going to be really, really happy. Now, let's talk about bonds and bond prices. When interest rates go down, bond values go up, and vice versa. And you always see, every time you read about bonds, they always say, bonds move inversely with interest rates. Like, okay, well, why is that? Well, because, you know, if I own a 4.5% bond and interest rates go down to 3.5% and I own a 4.5%, guess what? My bond's worth more than your bond. So it's up. Rates down, value's up. What about the opposite? The last couple of years, this is what caused some of the bank failures. They owned 1% and 2% coupons that matured in 2035. Well, guess what? When rates jump up to 4 and 5, what are those worth? Nothing. So that's what caused the run of the banks. That's what caused the collapse of the banks. And that's where we are today. So when it comes to opportunities, when you have a bond, there's two components. You have a coupon, which is your interest you get paid, and you have the price. So right now, and this is, I was talking to our institutional bond guy today, there's an enormous opportunity to buy in the discount market. Now, you might say, why in the world would I buy a bond that matures in 10 or 20 years at 1.5%. Well, two reasons. One, it's backed by a super big, great company in most cases. And two, you can buy it at an enormous discount. We're talking 60 cents on the dollar. What does that mean? I'm buying 60 cents on the dollar, and I know on this particular date, worst case scenario, I'm going to make 40% back contractually. It has to happen if that company's still around. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to make an extra 1.5% on the original face amount while I wait. So it's kind of like a dividend. So think about it this way. I'm buying something at 60 cents, 60% lower than it will mature at, and I'm getting a 1.5% coupon on the face amount, right, the original face amount. So it's really more like almost like a 3% dividend on the money I invested. So in other words, I have a $100,000 bond. I pay 60 grand for it. I have a $1 million bond. I paid $600,000. There's an enormous opportunity in fixed income that I've never seen before. So again, this show is not designed to answer all your questions, but it's to create cool questions. It's to create your questions in your mind. Are you in the right spot? Are you doing the right thing? Should you open your mouth and say something? The answer is yeah. Yeah, that's what it's all about. Figure it out. Give whoever you work with a call. If you don't work with someone, give someone that knows what they're doing a call. And that's the way it works. All right, let me take a quick break. Let me see where I am on time. Yeah, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap this booger up. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right. So what did I cover today? If you're catching the end of the show, I should do this every week, like a recap of the show. Like, what did we cover today? Then you can go back and listen if you want. Because always on WGCLRadio.com, after the Thursday night airing, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., and then wherever you get your favorite podcast. So, yeah, you can listen to it at your leisure, and you can slow me down, you can speed me up, whatever you want to do. but there's no reason not to. So I talked about, do you have an IRA and did you just get this form in the mail? It looked like a tax form called a 5498. What is that? Well, I talk about that in the show today. I talked about when do you should use your Roth money. I talked about that. I said, what about a guy my age doing one Roth conversion of $200,000 that could potentially be worth $6+ million when his son inherits it at an age of 68? You can go back and listen to that as well. That, but your wife has to live to 98, just so you know. Again, my wife's grandmother lived to literally like 98. Or no, your wife has to live to 93. Her grandmother lived to 98. I talked about tax maneuvers to think about in the year you lose a spouse. That's really a powerful message. And of course, I just wrapped up with a discussion on fixed income, which I hope you enjoyed. So I can't tell you exactly what I'm going to be talking about next week because I don't have it quite yet prepared, but I am, because I've been a little bit behind on just kind of getting back into the sorts here, into the groove, but I'm back in the groove. I'm really excited to be here, really excited for the rest of this year. Just a lot of great things going on. I'm going to be around. You know, you can travel too much, and this year's been a wicked, wicked travel year for me, and a lot of it's been for fun and stuff I did to myself, and I told someone, I think I've been traveling so much. One, I have a tremendous team back at the office. I mean, in fact, I think they like it when I'm gone because they get a lot done, and they handle everything. You know, the investment guys are doing that, and the service people are doing that, and really I'm out of their way and quit creating more chaos and confusion, so it's probably good for all them. But we went through that period of time where I was told I couldn't do anything, and I think I got to the point I just said yes to everything. So, yeah, I'll go there. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll come to this. And then whenever the floodgates opened back up, and for me, it was probably earlier than for a lot of people, I just said yes to everything. So somehow, some way, I was gone 2 weeks in January. I think I was gone a week in February. I was gone 2 weeks in March, a week in April, 2 weeks in May. So if you think about it, that's a lot of out-of-office time, a lot of being away from home time, and it just creates chaos. So I'm really happy to be home. I like being home. I love being at the office. So I think it rejuvenates you in some capacity, but also promotes some laziness in some other ways, because once you get out of the groove, if you know what I mean, it's hard to get back into the groove. You know, you on a Sunday afternoon after being gone for, you know, all this time, you think to yourself, man, I got to get back to it tomorrow. And what do you do? The best thing to do is go into the office on a Sunday afternoon if you want to, or go whatever it is, and just kind of dig into things, kind of get your mindset right. Maybe you clear up a few emails, just something, so you don't walk into a bee's nest on Monday morning. And that's been my philosophy for this past year. But I will be still traveling a little this year. But for the most part, I'm going to be home, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to enjoy the lake this year. And just friends and family and everybody else that happens across my path. So, hey, I hope everyone really enjoyed the show. I know it was a lot of material. I knew I was doing it solo today, which I intentionally did because of my absence the last few weeks. I hope you enjoyed Doug Hughes being in the studio. He always does a good job. Different tactic, different way of delivering things, but he's always very thoughtful in his content. I know the guys put a lot of work into what they wanted to present to y'all last week. But I was completely off the grid. I had no way to contact anyone. So listen, have a great weekend, everyone. I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.